You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
Welcome to Heritage Voices, episode 90. I'm Jessica Yaquinto, and I'm your host. And today we are talking about the Tonawatam Nation and Kitt Peak National Observatory, building relationships and creating resources. Before we begin, I'd like to honor and acknowledge that the lands I'm recording on today are part of the Nooch or Ute Peoples Treaty Lands, the Dineta, and the ancestral Puebloan homeland. Today we have Dr. Giselle Ramon Sabaran on the show, and she is going to introduce herself.
Skugtash, Wusa Jamoy, Aniap Jugi, Dr. Giselle Ramon Sabaran, Chapwak Amachid. Good day to you all. My name is Dr. Giselle Ramon Sabaran, and I come from the Santa Vera community on the Tonawatam Nation. I currently am the Tonawatam Nation Education Development Liaison for NYOR Lab that oversees Kitt Peak National Observatory that sits within my reservation. And I also am an adjunct instructor at Tonawatam Community College, teaching within the Tonawatam Studies program. And I also sit on a couple different boards. I am a current board member for Friends of Tucson's Birthplace that oversees Mission Garden in Tucson. And I recently joined the Friends of Saguaro National Park, which is near and dear to my heart. And, you know, pretty much grew up in Saguaro National Park, Tucson Mountain District, which is on the west end of Tucson, and was really my playground and, you know, just my backyard. And so really excited to be serving on those boards. And I'm also part of Arizona Humanities Speaker Series. So I travel around Arizona and give presentations about Tonawatam history and culture, or, you know, I do a presentation on my dissertation research, which is on the history of land and water in my community, Santa Vera. And I'm excited to be here with you all.
Yeah, so excited to have you. I also grew up in Tucson, and so this is very exciting to get to talk about a place that's also near and dear to my heart. So that's fun. So growing up in Tucson, well, in San Javier, near Tucson, what got you interested in this type of work? How did you get into this field?
So that's a good question. Both my parents are retired K through 12 teachers, and my mom taught out on the main part of our reservation in Sells, which is our capital, for many, many years. And I would drive with her. You know, my babysitter was in Sells, and then, you know, I went to elementary school where she taught. She taught second grade for, you know, many, many years. And so my brother and sister did the same, and, you know, we'd travel with her. And if you don't know where the main part of the Tonawatam Nation is, it's about 60 miles west of Tucson, one way. So
I was going to say that's a commute every day.
Yes, it is. And so, you know, again, me, my brother, and my sister, they're both older than me, but, you know, we would travel with her. And so I have these fond memories of traveling back and forth on Ajo Way, which turns into Highway 86. And I, you know, passed Kitt Peak National Observatory on a daily basis. And, you know, when I was young, we'd take field trips up there. And so, you know, it was very much part of growing up. And, you know, as I got older, there was always times when I would be drawn back to it for different reasons. And that really happened in 2010. And I was a freelance journalist at the time, my undergrad's in journalism. And I was working for Indian Country Today Media Network. And this is when they were actually in New York. Now they're in Phoenix. And so, but at that time I would freelance and I would write all sorts of different really awesome articles about, you know, my tribe. And then I'd get assigned, you know, other stories and get to talk to people from all over, you know, the US and even in Canada. And so it was really awesome experience being a freelancer for them.
Can you tell us about like a couple of your favorite stories working for them?
Sure. So I really always like to do feature stories and do profiles. And so a big goal of mine when I was a journalist and, you know, a young journalist was I really wanted people to understand that within Indian country, you know, there's yes, there's the the trauma, there's, you know, bad things that happen, but there's also good, because at the time growing up, all I ever saw was these bad and negative stories coming out of Indian country, you know, where it was controversial, or, you know, and so I really wanted to change that narrative and really be able to say, hey, you know what, you know, there is good out there, and there's people doing amazing things from Indian country. And so I helped with profile pieces. And so, I mean, those are really my favorite. And again, meeting people doing all these amazing things, from, you know, this one young individual, he was First Nations from Canada, and he was, you know, up and coming rapper, and just like his story of like what he had gone through, you know, that's what really, just to me, is hearing all different walks of lives. And so he, you know, was telling his story and found, you know, healing through music. And that was really something that he liked. And then others, you know, were just their academic careers and, you know, becoming lawyers. And then another, you know, she was up and coming fashion designer, like, you know, again, just amazing stories and what all of these different people were doing. And, you know, and it always tied back, every person I talked to tied back to their culture, their traditions. And, you know, and I always really connected with that. And so those are some of those stories. And so I was freelancing, you know, but also too, I had in journalism internships. And so I had this one internship in, I think it was my last year of my degree, my undergrad degree. And I was assigned to work with the newspapers that were south of Tucson. So that would include like Sahuarita, Green Valley,
Rio Rico.
Yeah, Sierra Vista, like all those areas. And they're all kind of networked under, you know, one news publication. And the editor I worked with, he was really awesome. And he was just, you know, wanting me to really push myself in terms of, you know, that's great, you know, doing features, but then also to like, what are other stories that you've been wanting to tell that you haven't? Like, he was just like giving me this opportunity. And I was like, cool. And I was like really into it, you know, and I was, you know, because I did, I had these, always had a list of stories, you know, or topics that you wanted to touch on. And one of them, you know, was Kitt Peak and wanting to talk about the history. And that actually came up when, you know, doing a story for Indian Country Today. And, you know, so it was just something that sparked an interest. And so it made it onto this list of like, hey, that's a future story. And then I was finally able to do that with this internship I had. And I always had been curious because I didn't know what the story was. I didn't know the history of how, you know, this observatory became, you know, part of the main part of the Thonaut Thumb Nation. Because we have four parcels that make up our 2.8 million acres, but they're not connected. And the four parcels were all designated by executive order at different times. And so, again, always piquing my curiosity, and whenever I'd drive by, and so I had this opportunity to write a story, and I started reaching out and figuring out, well, who could I talk to, you know, who would have this knowledge, and, you know, it led me to talking to one of my mentors, and the person who actually, you know, helped me get the job that I have today with Kitt Peak. Her name's Katie Garmany. And, you know, she told me, she said, well, this is what I know. And, you know, shared documents and everything else. That really started our friendship and, you know, me looking up to her as a mentor over the years. And so, you know, again, it was really like a starting point, right? And then being able to read through what she shared, what she knows, and then her suggesting, oh, reach out to this person. And so I wrote this story and it made it into Indian Country Today. And then also the newspaper publications for those small communities that are south of Tucson. And it actually was a really good story. And, you know, I wish I had had more time with it, but again, it was kind of like a starting point. And that's where I still share that article, even though it's 14 years old now. But again, you know, it opened my eyes to learning about the history, but also continuing to learn about it. And so today in the job that I have as a liaison and being a bridge person between Kitt Peak National Observatory and the Thonautham Nation, I'm now expanding on that. And I'm starting to reach out to, you know, more of our tribal members to ask, what do you know? What stories do you remember? What, you know, what was passed down to you? And so hoping to start being able to sit down with some of those individuals. Other, I mean, I've had others reach out too and talk to me and say, hey, you know what, somebody that would be really great for you to talk to, I'm going to connect you, you know. And so, again, just more preliminary, but it's exciting, though, because of that, you know, it really started things. And then 4 years ago, when I was still a PhD student, Katie reached out and said, hey, I have an idea, you know, I kind of want to run it by you, let's meet for lunch. And so we did, and she asked if I'd be interested in a summer internship. And she was really looking for a tribal member to help be able to be a resource, but also give cultural competency presentations to staff and, you know, anybody who's visiting Kitt Peak. You know, because there's always astronomers and scientists that come and visit and, you know, do research up on the mountain. And so I said, sure. And so then that's where, like, I picked up again of, like, okay, I wrote this article, you know, so many years ago. And then how can I update it? What else has happened over time, you know, in terms of, like, resources I have? And so I was starting to build a presentation. And I did do a number of presentations, and that was kind of like the start of everything. And then that internship then turned into a part-time job, and then finally leading into becoming a full-time job, which was last December. I literally finished teaching classes, had a weekend off, and I started my new position. But it was around the holidays, so it was like super chill, like easy, you know, really like flexible time. And I really just, you know, did things with like HR and, you know, like did those mm-hmm. types of, like, when you first start a job. And right. So it wasn't like, you know, I hit the ground running and like had some major project. But yeah, and so it's really exciting because my position is like the first of its kind. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I really saw a need. And that's why I reached out to a few people that I worked really closely with. And I said, what did you think about me coming on full time, or me proposing that at least? And everyone mm-hmm. was like, yeah, do it. And so I said, okay. And, you know, and other people had kind of hinted to me too of like, you know, it'd be great if you were here full time. And, you know, and so through all of those conversations, you know, and also I think also too through my spirituality and how I was raised and how I grew up, you know, there's things that you don't ignore, you know, and there I really felt a draw and a pull and a need, you know, for me to step into the role that I'm in now. And so, you know, I feel there's a lot of great work that we've done going from me being an internship to part time to now. And then there's still so much more that, you know, lies ahead, but moving in the right direction. And I also been getting really good feedback from, you know, Autumn, that whether I know or I just met, you know, and given a presentation to, and they're really happy to see me in this role and to know that there is an Autumn serving in this capacity. So it makes me feel really good, you know, that I am where I am. But it also came with stepping down from my faculty position that I had at the Autumn Community College. And that was hard, but I totally haven't walked away from teaching. So that's why I'm just now an adjunct instructor. And I'm still teaching. Well, now I'm teaching one class a semester, but when I stepped down, there wasn't anybody to replace me. So I continued to still teach multiple courses. But, you know, it's in my blood, you know, as I mentioned, both my parents being teachers, I, you know, grew up in the classroom. And, You know, I was there before school started, during school, after school, you know, so. And then I would also help my parents when I was old enough, and I'd set up their classrooms for them. And, you know, so again, that's what I mean by growing up in the classroom. And so when my mom retired, I felt the need to step in and continue what she had passed on to me and, you know, many of our generations before us in my family. And, you know, not to say that I wouldn't have otherwise, but I just really felt like, you know, being in an educator role was the right choice at that time. And so that's what I did. And I went back to school, got my master's and then my PhD. But during my PhD, the pandemic happened. I also had a child. And
that's a lot.
And, you know, of course, all of it, you know, my daughter not planned at all, you know, and but then also to the pandemic. And, you know, it was crazy. It was a crazy.
And a PhD. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So but during my time, it was hard to do my research. So then I looked into then getting a job until I could do my research, because when the pandemic hit, you know, of course there was, you know, city of Tucson ordinances in place, but also too, my tribe had their own as well. And so for my tribe, those ordinances actually, I felt, were in place longer, you know, and so that delayed things for me even more. And so I said, well, you know what, in the meantime, why don't I just start teaching? And, you know, I kind of did things a little bit backwards, but hey, that's okay. And so, you know, that I did that and I started teaching. And, you know, definitely it was hard juggling having a young one and teaching full time and still trying to work on my dissertation. And actually my last semester, I was teaching 5 classes and I wrote my dissertation and graduated. I don't know how,
wow.
To be honest, but I did, and I did it. And so, you know, and I still have those moments of like realization of like, wow, like, because I've been in school for so long. That I'm like, I'm done, like, you know, and I'm a doctor of philosophy now, like, you know, that's again, just really hard because I grew up very humble and, you know, and so, you know, to have those moments and just everything, you know, that I went through, because I went through my master's into my PhD. So there was no break. And so it was 9 years altogether. And so again, you know, it's just like those times where it's, I don't know, it's just, I surprise myself and, you know, I don't know. Sometimes I'm speechless about it, but, you know, I am proud to say that I'm a 3-time graduate of the University of Arizona. I'm a second
generation
Wildcat and the first in my family to earn a PhD.
That's awesome.
So, yeah. So I, you know, getting into that of, you know, saying that more and more, you know, whereas it before it was just, I don't know, like I never thought there was going to be light at the end of the tunnel, you know, and it was just like still try to hang in there and, you know, push forward. But then it was like getting pulled away because being faculty, you know, and being, you know, trying to fulfill all the responsibilities and duties I had, but I'm like, I still got to finish. And so, you know, it was just back and forth. And, but I mean, it's awesome, you know, everything that I've accomplished and been able to do. And, you know, now again, like those times of moments where I just am driving in the car and like, you know, thinking about things, I'm like, yeah, you know, like that happened and I did that and, you know, here we are. And yeah, so again, it's still also getting used to even being called doctor and utilizing that. And sometimes, you know, I forget and I come back to it. But again, you know, it's great to be, you know, where I am. I'm happy where I'm at and, you know, really wanting to, you know, be a role model and to make my family proud and, you know, be me and, you know, and push myself because I always love to be challenged and, you know, take on, you know, different projects and, you know, be involved in so much. And a lot of people are like, wow, you do a lot. But I'm like, I love it, though. Like, that's me, you know, in a nutshell, of like being here, there, everywhere. But, you know, I also know when it's time to be like, OK, you know, I need the weekend, or, you know,
I'm gonna it's too much.
Yeah. Or I'm going to go to, you know, Flagstaff and go camping with, you know, my family. So yeah. I know those moments. But yeah, I mean, that's essentially, you know, how I got into this position. But again, you know, it's a lot of it's also just being in tune. And as Otham, we're in tune with, you know, our environment, our Juwadaga, as we say, our land, you know, and that incorporates, you know, the weather, the seasons, you know, the plants, the animals, ourselves, you know, those that are that we love, you know, that, you know, part of our family and friends circles. And, you know, it's just like all of that really is interwoven and intertwined together. And so, you know, again, just going where I feel, you know, there's a need and where I can definitely help out, because I've always wanted to be a resource for people and always wanting to help in any way that I can. And if I can't, then I'll find somebody who can, you know. So that's, again, just how I was raised, and, you know, continuing to, you know, practice those things. And, you know, and like I said, be a role model and teach those to my daughter, Lydia. She's 5 and a half and she's starting kindergarten this week, which is exciting. Yeah, I know, it's a big milestone. I can't believe it.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. And then also to my sister, she, between her and her husband, they have 7 kids. And so, you know, again, also being there for them and, you know, and all the other youth that I talk to. And so I'm going to stop there because I feel like I could just keep going on and on.
No, that's perfect.
And I know we have several questions, so I might have actually answered a few of those.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're already at our first break point, but I'm excited when we come back to hear more about your work at Kitt Peak and some of these other topics as well. So we'll be right back. Okay. So coming back from our break, could you tell us a little bit more about your current work at Kitt Peak? What does that look like on a daily basis?
Sure. So within my position as a liaison, I do several different things. I lead tours up at the observatory with the Otham Nation groups. So whether it's from a program or a department, you know, on the reservation, or even like this summer, we had a lot of different summer programs come up from the Otham Nation. And we also had a couple come from the Pascua-Yaqui tribe, which is a neighboring tribe. And so leading those tours are a lot of fun. Also to, you know, having a chance to be able to, we have our engagement team. And so working with them and, you know, wanting to engage with K-12 school districts and talking about how we could do that, you know, and definitely, you know, a big part of what I'm doing and what I, you know, especially in the last 4 years, is helping reestablish relationships and communication. Because, you know, it's no fault by either entity, meaning the Otham Nation or with Kitt Peak, where, you know, there were relationships established, you know, good communication between folks. But, you know, people retire, people step into other positions. And so, you know, the relationships leave with these people. And, you know, maybe, you know, there's somebody that comes in that they're able to say, hey, you know, this is my point of contact, but not always, you know. And so I always wanted to make sure, again, you know, being a resource person and helping out. And so, you know, for myself, I noticed, I'm like, you know what, I don't know what goes on at the observatory. And I wonder how many other Otham, you know, are wondering the same thing. And so, you know, I started talking to folks, you know, at the observatory and, you know, trying to get an understanding. And a lot of it was, you know, because, yes, of course, people switching and positions or leaving, retiring, but also too because of the pandemic. And then also too, we had a fire, the Contreras fire in 2022, It was in the summertime. So having all this shutdown, you know, of the observatory, and with that, you know, people not knowing, well, where do I get updates? Or, you know, and people meaning whether it's from the Thanatum Nation, you know, or public. And so, you know, reaching out and to tell people like, yeah, you know what, you can get fire updates here, or you know what, you know, this is where I'm the person to contact now, you know, for special tours if you're from the Thanatum Nation. So again, you know, putting that out there and being able to do that. And we also created a newsletter that we have shared with tribal members, and hoping to do that, I don't know, we haven't really decided, but, you know, I was saying at least maybe 2 or 3 times a year to share updates, you know, because not everywhere on the Thanatum Nation is there internet access. Mm-hmm. So being able to create a newsletter that can be electronic or print, you know, and being able to share that out on especially the main part of my reservation, you know, is important. And so, and then also too, you know, we had a really big event in May, and it was the Thanatum Nation open night. So it was an evening for just tribal members to come up and participate in all sorts of different really fun activities, visiting different telescopes, being able to look through portable telescopes once the sun went down. You know, we had a kids zone. You could go into the visitor center and visit, you know, we have different displays up in there. We have a gift shop in there. So it was really a chance to then, you know, allow everybody to come up and be like, you know, we're open again, you know, this is who's in this position, you know, and all of this. And so, again, helping with that communication and rebuilding. And, you know, another part, too, is really being able to find a balance. So, like, within my Himathug, which translates to way of life, we really, you know, are big on having a balance, you know, of all, you know, different parts of your life, and you need to be in balance with all these things. And as I mentioned, you know, so much is interwoven and intertwined. And so carrying that with me and being a liaison and looking at the observatory and saying, you know, this resides within the Thanatum Nation, specifically the Shuktuak district. And it, you know, the observatory is on top of one of our sacred mountains, you know, the Quinlan Mountains in Otham. We call it Iogam Duwag, which translates to Manzanita Shrub Mountain. It also has a nickname of Ithoy's Garden, and Ithoy is our creator. So there's a lot of sacred knowledge and history on the mountain where the observatory is. So really trying to find this really good balance of, you know, sharing about our Himathug, which, you know, I feel like a lot of times, you know, that's where you need to start, you know, when, whether it's like with a tour or, you know, any information you provide, you know, and really having people understand place and where they're at, you know, because we get visitors at the observatory from all over, you know, from not only, you know, within the country, but outside the country too. And so, you know, again, having that, but of course we are at an observatory, you know, so sharing astronomy and science and, you know, just the amazing research being done, you know, and again, having this really good balance of the two. And so I've been really trying to do that and help, because I'm up there leading tours, but also too, we have docents and tour guides. And so just making sure like everybody's on the same page as well. And so, again, you know, doing all sorts of really awesome things. And the tours are my favorite because I just get, you know, to engage with, you know, my people, and, you know, especially when the youth come up and, you know, just talking with them. And we had youth workers that came up. So within my tribe in the summertime, our districts, they hire youth workers, you know, to come in and learn about, you know, maybe it is something that is of interest to them, you know, but also to saying, you know, well, there's these other jobs, and just, you know, again, it, giving them that opportunity to work and earn some money, but also to share with them, you know, these are different fields, these are different, you know, what this job entails versus this job to get them thinking about their futures. And so they came up to the observatory. And so I designed that tour a little differently because thinking about, you know, their age and what they were doing. And so having them learn from different folks that work up on the mountain and telling them, you know, it's, yes, we have our astronomers and scientists up here, but, you know, it takes so much more, you know, to run an observatory. You need somebody to feed everybody. You know, you need somebody to manage this. You need somebody, you know, to fix this. And so just, you know, giving them that exposure of these different jobs and these different people. And it's really neat too, because a lot of the people that talked and shared when they came up, you know, they've been in these positions for, you know, quite some time. And, you know, so again, it was really neat to give them, you know, that exposure of these different jobs, but also to, you know, we got to visit a couple of the telescopes and, you know, they had lunch up there with us. And so, and I'm always happy to talk about my educational journey and, you know, again, just be able to like be in the space with them and share. So again, that's like the fun part of my job that I really, really, really enjoy. And not to say I don't like the other parts of it too, but just being able to be up on the mountain. And, you know, it's always funny too, because people are like, wow, you drive up there every day. And I'm like, well, no, actually, you know, I'm only up there when there's tours or when I'm needed, you know, but through June I was up there, I felt like almost every day because of the different tours I was leading. But on a normal week, I should say that, you know, I might be up there maybe once out of the week. And then otherwise, you know, I'm working between my home office, and we have a headquarters that's on the University of Arizona campus. And so again, just kind of splitting my time between all the different places. But, you know, when I'm up there, it is something special. And, you know, I feel very honored, you know, to be able to be in my position and be able to lead the different tours and, you know, again, be that person of contact. And, you know, we had a really great tour yesterday up on the mountain with one of the communities that's, you know, right at the base of the mountain. And so, you know, again, it was great to engage with them and talk to them and, you know, hear, you know, their questions and concerns and letting them know that I'm there, you know. And so I think that's like the biggest thing, even though we've always had tribal members working at the observatory, but, you know, being in a liaison position, you know, I think is a really big step, and a big step, though, in the right direction and goals and plans that we have.
So if thinking about your work at Kitt Peak and like where you would like to go with that work, is there something that you hope, like by the end of your time there, that like this, I will have done this, or people will know this, or, you know, is there some sort of like larger goal that you have in mind that you're hoping for?
That's a good question. I mean, I haven't, you know, really thought about that, to be honest, you know, but I think the biggest thing, though, is just, you know, the communication and the relationship, because, you know, the lease was signed in 1958 between the observatory, what is now the observatory, and the Thanatum Nation, which at the time we were called Papago, and more specifically the Shiktuwak District, which is where the Quinlan Mountains and observatories within those boundaries. So if you're not familiar with the Thanatum Nation, if you looked at my tribe as its own country in comparison to the United States, within the United States, you know, we have all of our different states, or 52 states within the Thanatum Nation. Our equivalent is our districts, and we have 11 districts. And then within those districts, we have communities and villages, which are similar to cities and towns. And of course, you know, it's has to do with population. And so that's how ours is too, where you could have a village where there could be, you know, five families, or you can have a community of 2,000, you know, because we have in total 36,000 tribal members. And so within our districts, there's a chairperson and a vice chairperson, and you have a district council. And so own governing body for each of these different districts, just like how our states do, you know, and more specifically, even thinking about, you know, like City of Tucson Council having a mayor, you know, different things like that, that all kind of falls in line. But we do also have our three branches of government. So we have executive, legislative, and judicial. So our chairman that oversees the whole Tanautam Nation is the equivalent of the president of the United States. And so that's how we're structured governmentally. And so for the observatory, you know, the first people, you know, that we go to for, you know, any updates and, you know, sharing or any permission is with the Shuktuak district. And so, but again, you know, when that lease was signed in 1958, you know, it took some time for those tribal leadership to have a really good understanding of what an observatory was going to be, what telescopes did, you know, who astronomers were, you know. And so it took quite some time, you know, to have those discussions, because also too, you had tribal members, this is, you know, in the 50s, that didn't speak English. So you had to have translators too, you know, to help with those conversations. But then also too, there had to be this long-standing agreement of, you know, yes, we're going to lease this to you, but you need to uphold, you know, some of those things included providing job opportunities for tribal members, being able to have tribal members sell the arts and crafts in the visitor center, you know, being able to provide educational opportunities, not only for the public, but tribal members as well. So, you know, and there's more in there, but again, there was just, it was beyond just being, okay, we're going to lease this land to you. You know, it was like, there's these certain things that, you know, we want you to uphold that will benefit and help us as Autumn. And so, you know, I just want to help with that, to continue that. And, you know, again, having really good communication and having good relationships is a big part of that. And, you know, stepping into to this role and being able to help with that, you know, I hope that in the future, you know, there can be more tribal members in my role, or like we could have our own, you know, like little team. And that way, you know, when it's time to, you know, leave or retire, you know, then I know that I'll be in good hands, where there'll be somebody continuing this work, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think also too, I also, you know, this is more local, but I do a lot too national with colleagues in Hawaii. And we've been working together to really be able to help the astronomy community learn how they can engage with Native and Indigenous tribes, groups closest to them, you know. And they have a report, it's the Decadal Report, and a big part of that was saying, you know, as astronomers, as scientists, you know, and you think about what sort of relationship, if you have a relationship, or how you can start one and be a good neighbor to, again, you know, the Native Indigenous peoples closest to where you're working, you know. And so I think a lot of folks, again, didn't, you know, they saw that, but they didn't know where to start. And so between myself and my colleagues in Hawaii, we've been going to conferences to help give, you know, folks tools to use, and, you know, and providing information to them of, you know, where to start and how to do that. And so that just goes back to me and wanting to be a resource. But, you know, I really, you know, I feel like there's good things happening now, and, you know, and it's really great to meet all different folks. And then even after our conferences, for people to reach out and be like, it was really great meeting you, I have questions, you know, can we talk? And so, you know, again, those are just different things that I've been doing. And, you know, I just want everybody to just, you know, be happy and be really, you know, engaged with each other, and, you know, collaborating and having partnerships and, you know, everything in between there. And that's, I think for me, that's really a big goal of mine. And over the years and all the different things I've been doing, I've been able to build, you know, my network of go-to people. And so, like, for when we had the Thanatha Nation open night, you know, I said, well, I know, you know, so-and-so, and I know somebody here and here. And I'm like, I'm going to pull them in. And so it was really great because we had Saguaro National Park. We had Pima County Public Library. We had Tucson Children's Museum, you know, and, you know, they were there to support. And also Arizona Humanities, a couple of really great people I work with drove from Phoenix to come to that event and, you know, have an info booth and, you know, just make it a really fun night. And so, again, I was realizing, I'm like, you know what, I'm like, I know people, you know, I have friends and, you know, connections in all these different places and, you know, others really wanting to, you know, they didn't know how to engage with Kit Peak, but always wanted to. Right. And mm-hmm. so a couple of those organizations are like, yeah, that'd be awesome. You know, we're trying to reach tribal members and I've never been to Kit Peak. So, you know, that let's, you know, we'll come out, let's do this. And so that's been really great. But I think that's another part to it too, is like building partnerships. So like in a nutshell, you know, I just, you know, would big goals is, you know, making sure that our communication is good. You know, people are happy, you know, and we have these really great collaborations and partners, you know, in everything that we're doing and, you know, really being able to provide, like I said, with what's in the lease to tribal members and, you know, always keep up upholding and keeping, you know, what the observatory said it was going to do.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think that's so cool that you're going to, you know, astronomy conferences and things like that. And, you know, hopefully trying to avoid like Mauna Kea type situations. So that's awesome. Yeah. Cool. Well, it goes so fast, already at our second break point. But when we come back, I would love to hear some more about your dissertation. So we will be right back. Okay. So as promised before the break, I'm really curious to hear more about your dissertation work. Obviously, growing up in Tucson, land and water is a big topic. So definitely really curious to hear what got you into that topic, you know, what you found, some major takeaways, things like that about your dissertation.
Yeah. So when I decided to go back to school, so I graduated my undergrad and then I was like, I'm just going to get out of Tucson. I want to travel, you know, and I did. I studied abroad in Italy. Yeah, it was amazing. I spent a whole summer there. And then I was living in Seattle, Washington. I had a journalism internship there. And then I moved to Tulsa, Oklahoma, and I was working there for the Osage Nation and their tribal newspaper. And awesome. So, yeah. And so I got to explore and I have, you know, friends I still keep in touch that, you know, are live in Seattle and Oklahoma. And so when I was starting to think about, you know, next steps, I'm always, you know, thinking my future and, you know, all that great stuff. And my dad had encouraged me to go back to school and, you know, I kept thinking about it. Yeah. And then finally I was like, all right, I miss home, you know, and packed up, left my job and applied at the University of Arizona. And so I started with my master's and I have always loved history and I always made a point to do research on just things I was curious about when it came to my culture and, you know, just things I wondered about. So I always, you know, my topics always definitely related back to my tribe. And so, you know, with that, for my master's, I wrote a biography on the late Dr. Bernard Bunny Fontana, who was an anthropologist, and he spent his life's work writing about the Thanatha Nation and also the Santa Vera Del Bac Mission, which sits within my community. And he was a neighbor. He lived 5 houses north of like where my grandma's house, which is now my mom's house, and you know, my auntie, my uncle, my sister, like all of us kind of live, you know, in this kind of neighbors, this whole little area together. And so, but yeah, and so I always was like really curious about him, and I wrote a biography. And then after that, you know, and it got a lot of good attention from friends and family within my community. And you know, some people saw him as a community member because he lived right off of our reservation. And you know, and he had some really, I would say, good best friends, you know, like just neighbors, and everybody really liked him. And so, you know, I also did that because my mom and my mom's older sister, my Auntie Julie, you know, they really, you know, had fond memories of him, and he'd give them rides to the University of Arizona when they were going to school, and he was a professor there. So, you know, it's just kind of like a nice way to, like I said, honor him. Mm-hmm. So, but then having that, because he provided so many resources, and he had this really like deep appreciation for Otham and wanting to help and, you know, share his knowledge and provide, you know, what he could. And so there's these really great foundational documents that really have helped me as an Otham scholar, and, you know, to have something to, you know, work off of, right? When you're doing mm-hmm. research and wanting to see what's out there, you know, that predates when you were born, and, you know, be able to just get a glimpse into, you know, what life was like, you know. And so with that, it led me into what my dissertation research topic is. And the title of my dissertation paper is The History of Land and Water in Sanavir. And so a lot of it started within my master's and just what Bunny had written. And, you know, again, it was just kind of at the time I was writing more about his life, right? And why, you know, he chose to live, you know, right off of the boundaries of my community, you know, like just, I just wanted to know about him. And so whenever I would find something that he did, you know, whether it was like a report or, you know, anything, I just kind of was like, oh, I'm going to come back to this. And so when I was in my doctoral program, I started to then try to figure out, like, what should I write about? What should my topic be? So I talked to my mom, and I, you know, I talked to my Auntie Julie, and she was the one that really told me that I should put, you know, essentially a resource, create a resource that talks about the history, because so many people don't know our history. And where I come from in Sanavir, our history and what has transpired within my community is a bit different than the other three parcels that make up the Thonotham Nation. And it's because we have the Santa Cruz River that flowed, you know, for so, you know, many years. And we were able to keep that water flow, you know, alive until, you know, we had outside entities, you know, that started to move in and pump the water. And they didn't have the same mindset as us, as, you know, we just take what we need, and they took it all. And, yeah, you know, that ranged from farmers, and, you know, the city of Tucson was involved with, you know, doing that as the population grew. And so, you know, also too, having Jesuit priest Father Eusebio Kino come through and build, you know, the mission. And so, again, you know, it's just our history and encounters, and, you know, just what has transpired over time is a bit different. And that also includes having my community be part of the Dawes Act, and having allottees, or, you know, also referred to as landowners. And we were never put here to be owners of the land. We're here to be caretakers. So, you know, throwing that, you know, into the mix here, and So when my auntie was talking to me and she was like, you know, in terms of history, she said that a lot of people, you know, that then become allottees or landowners, you know, they don't understand the importance of it. They don't understand how we became to be allottees and what that means and what that entails. And, you know, and it was true. We really didn't have anything written down. You had to go talk to different people. My auntie was one of those people, you know, that is a knowledge keeper. And so she, you know, a lot of times people are like, you know, oh yeah, you know, your auntie's the one that always go and talk to you, you know, or have questions when it comes to land and water rights. And, you know, and, but for her, you know, she realized she's not gonna live forever. And she wanted to pass this knowledge on. And so I stepped up and I said, I will gladly accept, because I'm a future allottee. I need to know this. You know, and again, it was like going back to with Kitt Peak of, you know, how many others don't know the history of Kitt Peak, or don't, you know what's going up on the up at the mountain every day, as we say, you know what I mean? And so then that was kind of also for me too. I was thinking about with this topic, I was just like, I wonder how many other people kind of know things, because I did, you know, because I asked questions growing up, but, you know, don't know the full history and don't know, you know, the importance of being a landowner. And, you know, they have questions, but they've never known where to go or turn to. And so I said, okay, I'll gladly, you know, accept the duties of learning. And then also too, you know, a big part of what I wanted to do is where it was to stay true to our traditions, because we're an oral society. And I was going to do something that is not within our traditions, which is to write something down, right? And so I wanted to be mindful of that. And I wanted to get permission of, is this okay to do? Because I saw that, you know, we've lost so many elders over the years. And, you know, whether they were able to pass the knowledge on, or, you know, or in a lot of cases they weren't. So that knowledge is gone. And by having my dissertation research be on this topic and the way I wanted to structure it, you know, we were able to be able to preserve. And I did audio interviews, so I recorded, you know, and but then also to add it transcribed. And I really wanted my dissertation to be able to let people hear from these individuals that lived these events, because a lot of them happened before I was born. And, you know, I wanted, again, for people who are reading my dissertation to hear directly from these people. And I'm just there guiding it all, and I'm adding, you know, information throughout. But that also stems back from me being a journalist and, you know, letting you hear from, you know, different people. And I wrote it that way, you know, and I, of course, filled in and, you know, did my part as a scholar and a researcher and everything. But it was really to have their voices be heard, and especially since having this oral part to it and being able to record audio, you know, I again talked about, you know, people passing away. I had two of the people I interviewed pass away before I finished writing. So, you know, that just lent, you know, to, it kind of really leaned on what I was talking about and, you know, kind of opened people's eyes of like, hey, you know what, this is really important. Like, we, you know, really need to think about writing more things down, right? Yeah. Or recording it in some way. And kind of like I was starting to say, kind of like lent, you know, attention to that. And people then were like more on board, you know, not to say anybody was against me writing my dissertation on this, but, you know, I mean, there was certainly hesitation on my part too, but, you know, it all came together and I learned so much, and I was able to interview 15 people and, you know, I did tons and tons of research and dived into, you know, the tons of rabbit holes. And, you know, and I kept out a couple of times my dissertation chair. He's an amazing person. He kept saying, okay, that's great, but you got to come back. That's for a later project. And I'm like, okay, yeah, you're right. But, you know, again, I wrote, you know, something that is a resource and it's a living document. And it's, you know, I really look at it as my life's work. And, you know, I graduate, I'm a year out now, you know, graduating 2023, but it's been really awesome to just see it all come together and to go through the experience and learn so much from my own family and others, you know, that are community members, you know, and or relatives. And, you know, just even some of them, I'm like, I didn't know you were part of that, you know, and then they laugh at me. They're like, yeah, you know, this and that. And so it was really great to have that. And I think, you know, what I put together, you know, I've really gotten really good feedback from people. And, you know, because how can you talk about the present and plan for the future if you don't know the history? And so I really wanted to be able to give that history and give people a starting point so they have that understanding so then they can move into these other parts. And, you know, at the center of your cooperative farm, you know, which I'm very proud of the farm and, you know, the amazing work that the individuals that work there are doing. And so, you know, they had shared at one of their meetings that, you know, they were really happy with having a copy and being able to read. And I did a presentation for them too, because, you know, everybody had a better understanding. And that just made me happy because I'm like, that's what I want. I want people to know and, you know, and put my dissertation paper on their shelf and always know they can reach to it for, you know, a reference or, you know, and to share it with others and just have this really clear understanding of what transpired for us, you know, and how we lost our water, but then, you know, we stood up and we fought to get it back. And, you know, just again, what really took place over time and, you know, thinking about the future, because in Arizona, you know, we're talking about climate change on a daily basis. We're talking about environmental issues. We're talking about drought, you know, all of these different things. And so, again, it's been great because I really set up my last chapter of that of like, well, you know, this is what's been in conversation. You know, this is what I've been reading. And these are really great, you know, jumping off points. And so I've been, since I graduated and finished my paper, you know, being part of climate change workshop in my community, being able to attend, you know, a community planning meeting, you know, working on some grants right now to be able to, again, continue these conversations and help in any way. So, you know, we stay informed and we're, you know, educating each other and sharing like our expertise in our different fields and, you know, and just, you know, again, moving forward and being, you know, within the community, you know, again, coming together in different ways. And yeah, I guess I think the biggest thing is just staying informed. And so, you know, it was an experience, but, you know, I'm continuing on and, you know, next steps, definitely wanting to do publications. We've talked about we, meaning like my family and some of the different organizations I worked closely with during my dissertation about publishing my dissertation into a book. And so we'll see where things go. But, you know, I've been able to go all over Arizona and present about my dissertation topic and, you know, just really inform people. Like I said, like, you know, inform people, but also make sure my community is informed and, you know, making sure that they have the resources and, you know, we continue talking and having conversations about these very important issues that we're facing, you know, in Arizona. And, you know, again, also our youth, it's so important for them to know these things and be part of these conversations. So it's been great to see those coming to our meetings and, you know, even my nieces, having them come to and being part of everything because they are our future leaders, you know. And so it's, and for me, it's like stepping into like kind of this next stage of my life too, where I'm like, I'm not this little like high school, like, you know, I'm auntie, like I'm now like stepping up, and, you know, being in these roles and I'm just like, you know, the adulting and everything. And I'm like, and I'm a mom now and, you know, all these things. And so, you know, it's like all these things that were told to us. And so some of my other friends were, I'm like, we're it now. Like, we're doing these things. And, you know, they're like, I know. And I'm like, it's kind of scary. But, you know, we knew this day was going to come. And so then now, you know, we're talking to the younger generations and saying, hey, you're going to be up here in our, you know, our positions too, you know, and, you know, we want you to have, you know, that confidence and, you know, be passionate and, you know, carry on. And so I think that's another big thing for my research was, you know, being able to, yes, provide, but also to have the youth also know, like, hey, you know what, this mm-hmm. is what happened. And, you know, and when you become a tribal leader, you know, this is something that you can refer to, or, you know, you'll know, you can come to me to ask questions, you know, and whenever you need help. And so, yeah, it's just all these different moving parts. But again, like I was saying earlier, you know, everything is just really interwoven, intertwined. And, you know, it's just, again, you know, being a resource, being helpful in any way that I can is really what I've always wanted to do and will continue to want to do. And that's in a nutshell of how everything came to be. And, you know, and it was, you know, of course, for my research and academic wise, but also like personally, I learned so much. And, you know, because I need to know these things, especially when it's my time to step into being an Alati or landowner and, yeah. you know, be concerned with these different issues and going to meetings and, you know, being able to vote and make decisions on, again, different things that are relating to our land and water rights.
Yeah. Well, and I'm so excited you sent me your dissertation. So we will, as long as everything goes right with uploading it, there's no issues. That should be in the show notes. So look for that in the show notes. There also will be some other really great links, including a couple of videos from Arizona Humanities of you talking about some different topics. So everyone definitely check all of those out. The show notes will be a wealth of resources. And I just wanted to say thank you again so much for coming on and talking to everyone today. And, you know, it be still my Tucson heart. it was just so great to learn from you and hear more about this important work that you're doing. So thank you.
You're welcome. And thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Heritage Voices podcast. You can find show notes at www.archaeologypodcastnetwork.com/heritagevoices. Please subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, or the Google Play Music Store. Also, please share with your friends or write us a review. Sharing and reviewing helps more people find the show and gets the perspectives of Heritage Voices' amazing guests out there into the world. Don't we just need more of that in anthropology and land management? If you have any more questions, comments, or show suggestions, please reach out to me at jessica@livingheritageanthropology.org. If you'd like to volunteer to be on the show as a guest or even a co-host, reach out to me as well, jessica@livingheritageanthropology.org. You can also follow more of what I'm doing on Facebook at Living Heritage Anthropology and the nonprofit Living Heritage Research Council, or on Twitter at Living Heritage A. As always, huge thank you to Lyle Belenqua and Jason Nez for their collaboration on our incredible logo.
This episode was produced by Chris Webster from his RV traveling the United States, Tristan Boyle in Scotland, DigTech LLC, Cultural Media, and the Archaeology Podcast Network, and was edited by Rachel Roden.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.